on the computer again.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Cue Ron.
Okay. Thank you, BuzzFeed. 13 passed this, and they're happy.
They are.
Okay. Now, we are trying to work our way through some technical difficulties here. If I put the host in the green room, is everybody still able to hear me?
Yes, because you're talking through your phone, which is on the live side.
Okay, so it's not muting anything, because that mutes it. That mutes the host. That doesn't mute anybody else?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, so you can hear me and... And the program is recording me and everything, so. Okay. Yeah, it jumped back by itself when it went live. It went live and jumped back onto the microphone by itself.
Yeah, I was wondering why that happened. I was like, ooh, that's not good.
So then I started to wonder if maybe it had to be there, but I guess not. Yeah, I'm having mic problems again. It's through Blog Talk Radio. I guarantee you, and it's irritating, but it is at times that way, and so we deal with it. That's one of the fun things about being live. We talk about all the people who record their shows and edit. Well, this is the fun thing about being live. We got Blog Talk Radio that gives us issues. And
you get to hear issues because it is live. Well, there you go.
That's right.
It is not a perfect show between.
for sure.
Laptop, internet, storms, what else?
whatever. No hurricane to worry about this time. The hurricane was sort of a non-event, though. We didn't really get much of an issue here.
Yeah, I was worried about you guys because you're like right up there.
It was really not much of an issue. We got rain and a little bit of wind. I mean, not really anything to speak of. It blew a few little small branches. And I say small, maybe, 2-3 feet at the biggest ones out of the trees. It blew all the loose ones out. And that was about it. I mean, it really overall wasn't a major issue. From what they're saying, it's dumping a lot of rain up the coast right now.
Yeah.
So.
Georgia.
Georgia and into the Carolinas. So it's affecting them, I think, more than it did us here. So,
yeah.
Hope everyone is safe all the way through its pass. It died over Cuba and never really had a chance to pick up its speed a whole lot. So we're happy.
Became a hurricane shortly after Cuba, and then it went back to a tropical storm. I think it was I heard it was a Category 1 for a little bit, and then it just didn't have enough energy. So
that's the way I am too. I jump up and I become energetic and all that. And then it's just like, oh, this isn't worth it, and then I slow down again. So I can understand the hurricane's thoughts on that. So. And I would be amiss if I did not say congratulations, Tampa Bay Lightning, for winning their second in a row Stanley Cup. Quite an accomplishment. That's a pretty rough pretty rough cup to get, pretty rough championship to get. I mean, it's, you know, just, you know, being out there and playing ice hockey and hitting the puck around and doing that stuff, that in itself is beyond the mere mortals of the earth. And then to be able to go through and win, what was it, four series they had to win to win the cup, that is really quite an accomplishment. So, so congratulations, Tampa Bay Lightning, on the Stanley Cup and a two-peat. So that's really quite an accomplishment in itself. So,
absolutely.
So good for them. And let's see, what else is going on that is nothing to do with wine that we can talk about? nothing.
All about more.
Yeah, all about sports, all about the weather, all about, you know, everything. Got to cover all the bases before we go into it. We have any holidays coming up? We don't have any holidays, I don't think, either, do we? No.
No.
So I was just telling Mike, I had microphone problems before when I got on the air, and so I could hear Mike, and he could not hear me, and he was telling stuff about Colorado wine, and he was doing a good job. I thought, well, heck, I don't even need to stay on the program. I'll just let Mike talk about Colorado tonight. And
tonight's guest, Mike Regan's brochure. I got this one when I went to Colorado like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something. I went it was 2 years ago, and it snowed. How stupid is that for to get a record blizzard? It was, what, October? I forgot when I went. I mean, sure, it's. Oh my God! What a ridiculous amount of snow they got. And,
yeah, it was. It really was.
And but finally got to venture out after getting a four-wheel drive car, and picked up some brochures, and a lot of places were not having it. But yeah, that's one of the brochures I picked up was Discover Colorado Wine. So I thought that was pretty cool. But,
and he was reading some stuff before the show, and it was, you know, really a lot of interesting,
normally,
stuff in Colorado.
Normally, before the show starts, you entertain me, and, you know, we kind of go back. But I couldn't hear you, so I had to do like a monologue, and I was like, I have nothing. Wait a minute.
Hey, there's Colorado.
If you hadn't gone on. If you hadn't, you know, called in, I was going to recite the stuff that I find on the Boulder Discovery map of Colorado. It's one of those touristy maps.
Uh-huh.
It's not like a real map, like somebody hand drew it and did some crayon, you know, stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I go,
yeah,
well,
the little stick figures.
Yeah. I have that right here. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But I was going to do that next. But
I now am comforted in the thought that if I am seriously ill and I can't let you know that I'm going to be on, that you can pick up the gauntlet and take it to the finish by talking about stuff like that. So
if not, I will play the air drums. Well, they can't hear it, but the drum, and I have my keyboard next to me. We'll play some tunes if nothing else.
There you go. That, yeah. But I know that you can pick it up and carry it to the finish. So I'm comforted in that thought that, you know, over the years, you have been able to just jump in there and improvise very quickly and easily. So.
Thank you.
So, we don't have a guest tonight, but we do have info, as always. Some things that I've found that I think might interest you, and, well, they interest me, and so, therefore, I hope they interest you. And I'll tell you about some of that stuff and a couple other things that I found here that I want to mention to you. Where is that? I throw stuff all over my desk here, and I have it everywhere. And I sometimes can find it, and sometimes I can't. And so if I say, ooh, here it is, I should have talked about that on the show. And then it's misplaced and all that, but oh well. Okay, so we've got a few things to talk to you about tonight in the wine-related world and some of the stuff that's going on out there, and some of the stuff is rather odd, but it is all wine here. So, Arkansas, there's an Arkansas agricultural mogul who just bought his sixth name brand Napa winery. No, don't do this to me. I'm going to go home. Don't you hate it when it does that? Okay, here we are. Okay, so, come on, don't do that. This is, I'm getting this off of the San Francisco Chronicle site. And I love the San Francisco Chronicle, by the way. It's one of, always been one of my favorite newspapers. But, okay, keep reading the unlimited digital. Will that give it to me? No, it won't. Let's see. Okay, here we go. I'm into this, and this is what I want. Will it take it away? Yes, it will. It'll take it away every time, and it didn't take it away earlier. Well, welcome to live show again. Keep reading.
If this was a recorded show, none of this would have been on the air.
None of this would have been on the air, yeah. Okay, at least there you go. Jeez. Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to read this information to you. I was reading it earlier. But a Galen Lawrence Jr. Is the Arkansas rancher, who just bought 27-acre property that will be the home for the tasting room for the Burgess Cellars. And that was the main winery that burned in the glass fire last year, if you remember. And he just bought that out. And he has bought others, too. This isn't his first one. He's bought numerous other wineries, six total, to be accurate about it. And he's making quite a footprint there. I will find out more about this and get this article up. I had it earlier. Why? Well, maybe it's because I tried to pull up twice in one day. So let me find out more about this, and I will report it to you next week. Ah, I hate it when that does that. So, all right. So that is the end of that. Yeah, see, that's one of the fun things about live programs. So, like, okay, this next one is the California wine industry. This was this really caught my eye here. This California is the biggest state for wine. We all know that, but what we don't know is how really, really big it is. California is the fourth largest wine producer in the world, behind Italy, then France, then Spain, and then California. Another thing that surprised me in that statistic right there was Italy is ahead of France, too. Italy produces more than France. But Italy, France, Spain, and California in that order. So it's enormous, and they supply wine to everything. The industry is here. People love going to the wineries. They love relaxing. They love doing everything, and they expect good, decent wine coming out of California because that's what California is noted for. Well, Giulielmo family's roots in California go back to 1925. Says the current owner of Giulielmo Winery. And it's been the centerpiece of their existence for years, and it ties into all the stuff that they've done in the history of the state and the wine and everything else. And he said it's an interesting industry, but it's ever-changing, and the wine industry has always been a strong contributor to the state's economy. And he says he doesn't really see that changing. What makes California the center of the fine wine industry is the U.S. And the U.S. is a combination of climate, soils, devotion of the business, and people following up with it and taking care of stuff. Jones Family Vineyards owner Rick Jones says that despite all the inherent advantages that California has for making great wine, there is also many challenges. COVID closed down restaurants, and that were a big part of the market for consuming California wines. They had to pivot the wineries around to try to find an outlet for wine other than restaurants. Then they had the wildfires, particularly in the North Bay, and that was devastating last year. Estimated cost of the wine industry in 2020 was around $2 billion. $2 billion. Now, let me give you a little quick statistic here, which I saw not too long ago to put it in perspective. 1 million seconds is 11 days. Okay? 1 million. 1 billion seconds is 30.14 years. So when you're talking $2 billion, that's a tremendous amount more than just a few million here or there. And just as a little extra aside here, 1 trillion seconds, and when they start talking about spending $1 trillion on this or that, that's 30,137 years, or 301 1/3 plus centuries. That's 1 trillion in seconds. So staggering, really staggering if you think about it that way. But $2 billion in loss in California because of the wildfires last year. The glass fire broke out on the 27th and went through the Jones Vineyard property, and they said they lost about a third of the vines that they were protecting, that while they were protecting the home and the rest of the vines. And all the trade associations, the Wine Institute and Napa Valley Ventures Association, all responded quickly and helped them out. Said the policy advocacy group of the Wine Association and Napa Valley Ventures Association has over 1,000 California wineries, and they help on behalf of the industry and everything else. Also bringing stuff before the governor and putting funds in the state budget for the wildfires to try to prevent wildfires. And also the Wine Institute was instrumental in helping keep the employees safe and helping get shots for all the workers and all the employees, and even to the farm workers too. They were instrumental in doing that. And it's just a lot of talent, a lot of people in California working to keep California going, all that. And they said everybody has challenges, and they think the wine industry is very resilient and it's going to bounce back. 49 of the state's 58 counties grow grapes. They're everywhere. And because of that, it is an agricultural event that you cannot escape. And they're saying that they're recovering. They're recovering quite well after the fires, after the COVID, after the shutdowns and everything. California is making a very decent recovery. So overall, something that California can be proud of and something that we can look at and say, all right, I'm glad somebody's doing something and is taken care of. And then, you know, open it up for visiting again and open up for tasting and all that. So if you can make a trip to California, those are the things that we always hope we can see, and they are available now. I don't know if you're – I'm a golf fan. I'm a sports fan, basically, but a golf is one of the things I do, actually. And Phil Mickelson won – oh, this is in the Chronicle again. It's not going to let me finish this article. Damn it. All right, this is another one I'm going to have to skip over. Actually, there's two of them here that I was going to. And it let me read them earlier. Why is it not letting me read them now? Okay, I'll have to get back to you on that one, too. Let's see if we recorded this. We could have just skipped this. You would never know that that did that to me. This is something I don't. we haven't talked about him, and this is we've talked about some people in the wine industry that have passed away, and some of the big names over the years and stuff like this. Just recently, Donald D. Galliano passed away, and he was a big member in the Cucamonga Valley and the area there, and the wine and the board and stuff. He passed away June the 2nd. He was the president of the historic Cantu Galliano Ranch in Mira Loma. He was a fifth-generation winery, the fifth-generation of winery founded in 1927. The Galliano is the oldest Prohibition-era winery in the Cucamonga Valley, still owned by the family and operated at its original location. And he's passed it on to his family's sons. He has been in community service for years, served on a variety of leadership positions, served on the board of directors of the Western Municipal Water District, and was a representative of the Water District of Southern California. He was on the National Orange Show Foundation Board and Los Angeles County Fair Board, and was Riverside County Businessmen Association President and Chamber of Commerce President. And, it, you know, it's just really involved in communities and wineries and all that. And he passed away June the 2nd. And I think, you know, 1952 he was born. So that would make him 69, I believe. You know, around 69, depending on what date he was born. And so he will be missed. I would see his name pop up whenever I was reading different articles and stuff about Southern California. He was very involved in a lot of the stuff in Southern California. So I wanted to pass that on to you just because of his presence and the fact that I've seen the name quite a few times before. Okay, now. Sip of my wine tonight. Let me take a sip of it, and I'll tell you what we've got here. Oh, that's good. It is called H3 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon Horse Heaven Hills, hence the H3 Horse Heaven Hills Vineyard. It says 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon Horse Heaven Hills, Washington State. H3 is inspired by the wild horses that used to roam the Horse Heaven Hills. Each wine is carefully cultivated to bring out the complex flavors of this rugged landscape. Aromas of dark fruits and currants with a balance of earthy and deep berry flavors with a cocoa finish. 100% family farm and estate sourced fruit. And then it has a QR code so you can find out more about it. They show more on this label. It's fine print, so let me take a closer look at it. This label says average analysis per 5 ounce, calories 129, carb 4.3 grams, protein 0 gram, fat 0 gram, less than 1 gram sugar per 5 ounce glass. There you go. They're already starting to put some information labels on some of the wines. We've been talking about that off and on. Here's one that has some of it on it. Not nearly as involved as some people would like and some people suggest, but it is a start, I guess. This is good. I do get the dark fruit. It definitely dark fruit. I'm getting more dark cherries, black cherry, than I am currants. Definitely a dark berry type aroma and taste to it. I'm not getting a cocoa finish, and the engineer didn't get the cocoa finish either. She mentioned that she wasn't getting that, but she's picking up the dark fruits and the berries. A little bit of tannins, not a lot, but just enough to make it really good, because I like that little bit of tannin, which probably age for another 2 or 3 years if you really want to, but I like the balance of tannin, so it's good now. It doesn't have a whole lot of acid, which is really nice. A lot of times you get wines anymore that seem like the acid is the predominant note, but it's not in this. This one is really this subtle amount of acid in the back that doesn't overpower anything. It lingers well. It's got a good, strong aftertaste. It is really, overall, a very good wine. Very dark color. If you see it, H3, that's what's predominant on the bottle. I think this was a $16 bottle, $16, $17 bottle. I'm not sure, right around there. So if you see it, pick it up. It's worth the cost. It's great. This would go great with some of your barbecues this summer. If you're looking at getting something that's heavy meats and stuff that you're throwing on the grill, ribs, or any steak, obviously, I think this would balance out well. It's not overpowering in the tannins, and I think it'll give you a nice meat, wine type balance back and forth there. But H3, 2018 Cabernet, I guess 2018 is the vintage that's out now on this. I didn't see any others, so that's the only one. But that is my wine this evening, which means I need to take another sip. It is good. It is really good. Okay. Back to this here. Oh, let's see. What do we, oh, here we go. Violent hailstorms hit vineyards in France and Spain. I don't know if you've heard about this or not. A series of violent hailstorms have hit with Vouray and Ribera del Duero suffering the worst damage. The Spanish newspaper says many as 2,000 hectares, which I can't do the conversion from hectares to acres in my head, so I can't help you on that, were affected by a hailstorm last week, representing 10% of the region, with the main damage around the town of Pescoro de Duero. It says affected Spain's most prized fine winemaker, Vega Sicilia, with a 32-hectare vineyard used for its wine, seeing damage from the storms, which left the carpet of hail as much as 10 centimeters deep in certain areas. Wow. Elsewhere in France, another intense storm hit the Loire with intensity in the region of the Vouvray. It took place about 9 p.m. in the evening. As much as 50 millimeters of rain and hail fell in just 3 minutes, stripping the vines and damaging the stems. And they were basically localized, but it was a devastating effect on it. The springtime hailstorm, or early summer hailstorm like this, really hurt them, considering that they had some severe springtime frost. And so the grapevines were behind on a lot of their flowering and budding and getting fruit set and all that. So because of that, it could hurt some of these vineyards over there. But that just happened. So I wanted to pass that on to you. Yeah. So
2000. I don't know if I'm on or not. 2,000
yes.
Hectares is 4,942 acres.
Wow. So the hectare is a lot less than an acre, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Almost two and a half to one, yeah. Wow.
Yep. 2.5, yeah, pretty close.
So, you know, 4,000 acres, that's a lot of area, 4,000 acres, 4,500, yeah. Wow. So, thank you. This next one is the whole article goes on. It's just what caught my eye was the Penfold Grange. Australia has wineries, as you know, and they have a lot of good wineries, as you know. But one of the high-end ones is Penfold's Grange. They come out every year with some fantastic wines, some phenomenal wines. They are the one of the premiers in Australia that actually goes around the world and people know about it and all that. There's a lot of premier wineries in Australia that never leave Australia because it is absorbed in the persons in Australia before it even has a chance to be shipped anywhere else for anyone else to try it. But Penfold Grange is one of those that is high-end, expensive, and very good. Well, two full sets of Penfold Grange valued at $400,000 each have been seized by police as part of an operation called Operation Ironside, which they're billing as the Sting of the Century. Now, before I tell you about this Penfold Grange, let me tell you about this whole operation. This was, you can see why they call this, this is a little bit wine-related, but this is interesting. This massive police operation, which began 3 years ago, has now seen 224 people in up to 20 countries charged with various offenses. Police say charges relate to serious criminal matters, including conspiracy to commit murder, large commercial trafficking of controlled drugs, firearm possession, and money laundering. The focus of police raids in South Australia has been the Camachero Outlaw Motorcycle Gang. According to a report in the Advertiser, which is a paper down there, the South Australian police have seized 68 luxury vehicles, including Mercedes and Lamborghinis, as well as expensive watches and a number of extensive wine collections, including the two sets of Grange. The FBI were secretly behind an encrypted device called ANOM, A-N-O-M, which was being monitored by Australian Federal Police in Canberra. Which criminals used to communicate and plan crimes, believing their messages were safe from police, the Advertiser says. But it was the ultimate Trojan horse, and the AFB was reading the 25 million messages in real time. The Australian Federal Police say 3.7 tons of drugs, 104 weapons. Now, this number got me to it. It's 44,934,457 million dollars in cash. Okay, so that's 44,934,457 million in cash and assets expected to run into the millions of dollars for the assets have been seized. The operation went into its overt phase this week when police raids began in Australia and other countries. Organized crime syndicates target Australia because, sadly, the drug market is so lucrative. Australians are the world's biggest drug takers. Oh, my gosh. And I never knew that until I just read this earlier today. Police said they also foiled 21 murder plots using intelligence from ANOM. This included an alleged plot to murder a man by gunning him down with a machine gun on the parade at Norwood. If the two sets of Grange are truly complete, with the original 51 included, they would be worth more than $400,000 on recent auction form. In December last year, a Sydney wine lover paid $430,000 for a set of Grange. The incredibly rare set of 64 bottles included all vintages of Grange from 1951 to 2015, which I think 2016 is out now. I don't think they released a 17. A Penfold's Grange set is a wine collector's ultimate dream, said Langton's head of auctions, Tamara Grisley. It has been estimated that there are only around pinfold grain sets in existence in the world, making them incredibly rare. The previous auction record was set in December 2019 when a set of pinfold grain sold for $372,800. At the Barossa wine auction held in April, an Imperial of Penfolds Bin 95 Grange, an Imperial is a big bottle, Grange 2016 sold for $58,250. That includes the buyer's premium. So, no wonder they're calling it the sting of the century. Just the bottles alone, the wine bottles alone that they found is amazing. But, you know, they included a lot of other wine and everything else. So that's just, it's just astonishing, not to mention all the other stuff that was involved with that sting. So starting in 2018, they just finished it up just recently, just a couple weeks ago, about a month ago now. About a month ago. Just this is an amazing thing. Saw something here which I thought was interesting too. Vineyard designation in France. Vineyard designation has been really common in France. The Grand Cru designations was established in 1855. This was at the Exposition Universelle after the Emperor Napoleon III asked each of the wine regions in France to establish a classification. And so the Grand Cru became the highest classification of wine. And it can refer to either the plot of land in which the grapes are grown or the chateau in which the wine is made. And we've talked about Grand Cru before. It might be fun to talk about it again soon here, because it's really interesting, the wineries that are involved with it and the designation, how they came about and all that. But in Burgundy, Alsace, Champagne, Languedoc, and the Loire, Grand Cru refers to land. In Bordeaux, Grand Cru refers to the chateau. Now, the closest thing in California, and actually the closest thing we have anywhere near in the United States, is the AVA, or the American Viticultural Area designation. And that was launched in 1980, a good 140 years, well, not quite, 125 years after the French came up with theirs. And it was the goal of trying to carve out and define terroir, and not so much the wineries itself, but the land. It is useful if people know what it is, but it's supposed to give you a precise idea of flavor, aroma, spirit, describing a good example. Naming the AVA in which a wine is made is like describing a flower as red. Okay, this was made in Napa AVA, so that shows the flower as red. Naming a Grand Cru is like describing it as crimson or vermilion. It just gives you just such a precise description, whereas it's rather general. AVAs here in the United States are rather general. The real Grand Cru is carved in stone, obviously. To be truly noticed and understood, the Grand Crus are cherished by wine enthusiasts. They're the ones that look at the Grand Crus, are the ones that, you know, they don't say this is a 1951 Chateau Montalina Rothschild. They say this is the Grand Cru, what it is. So it's become. But the vineyards that seem to pop up on the most highly rated bottles with ever-increasing frequency is the ones that the people are looking for. Well, California's looking for that too. All right, they are looking at increasing their well, certain wineries, I shouldn't say California, I should say certain wines are increasing it. It's not appreciated how extraordinary and rare some of these vineyards are, says James Hall, who is a winemaker and founder of Sonoma's Pats and Hall. They specialize in single vineyard Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Now, we have talked to people who have vineyards who specialize in one or two grapes, and that's it. And that's what they do. And it's quite specific in what they're trying to do and what they're trying to come up with. James Hall continues, when people talk about Grand Cru wines from Burgundy, they're talking about less than 5% of the wines made there, which, you know, I don't think people understand that. They've been studying these places for hundreds of years. California is just getting started, and not nearly as many truly great vineyards in the New World as people think. But there are ones that are somewhat mysterious and magical, ones that can produce wines with emotional impact. These are the ones that they're looking for to try to make them a more of a designation, a Grand Cru type designation. And it says, while California is unlikely to ever formally recognize these rock star vineyards, that doesn't mean that it can't be done on an informal basis a little bit more. They want to understand the phenomenon, everything else. So the article goes on and starts talking about the fruit. It starts talking about, you see, the small vineyards and the small amount of grapes that are produced, and the vines that are on their own roots, which is extremely rare in California because of phylloxera. So these grapes are in great demand. Now, I don't know, you know, that's always surprised me, if I may editorialize for a moment here. Why would it make so much difference? Because the root system is just a feeding system to the vines, but they are really in a premium if you can find grapes that are on the original rootstock, because the phylloxera gets into the original rootstock of the Vitis vinifera. They really need to be planted in, or grafted into American roots, and if they're not, phylloxera couldn't invade them very quickly and very easily. But it is something that comes at a premium in California. If you can find farming of original rootstock, then it becomes very special. And I don't know if it would make a difference in the grape taste or not. I tend to think no, but maybe I'm wrong. So they're looking at doing more of getting a designation in California of, well, actually, a few people are. It's, you know, the, what is it, James Hall and another man by the name of Hall and Julian Fayard, who is a farmer in Robert's Vineyards, and Tom Gamble. These are people who are looking at doing a type of Grand Cru type designation. They are all small estate wineries. They all have distinct growing areas. They all have very limited productions of what they do. Usually Cabernet, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. Pinot Noir seems to be very popular too in the small production of the different wineries. Vineyards with 12 to 14 acres making all different Pinot Noirs, and 6 to 8 vineyards with just Chardonnay. This is very popular all around Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino, and stuff like that. And these are the ones that are looking at doing a specific type of designation. Don't know what's going to ever happen. It might come about if they continue on. I'll let you know about it if I see anything else about it or if it ever happens. It took a long time for the French to come up with their prestige that they have under their Grand Cru now. Just being Napa, California on the label, that has a lot of prestige, but these guys want to make it even more personalized. They want to take it that one step further. So they said they're paying top dollar now for the grapes they're getting. They're paying top dollar now for the what they're doing and all the equipment and everything else. And they are delivering nothing less than perfect, which I think that's going to interpret, and it doesn't say it here, but you're going to be paying top dollar for the wine itself. And just more designations on the bottle, I think, is going to give them the, the license to charge you more and feel that it is okay to do that. So there you go. That's just something that's going to be happening out there. I saw this and I thought this was a little bit funny, but it's something that goes on. And what caught my eye about this is the fact that I got a cease and desist letter when I had the winery. This is a Napa winery. Appalachian Trading Company is suing Salvestrin Wine Company. And it's a St. Helena company, a Napa-based Appalachian Trading, produces a Napa Valley wine called Cult, C-U-L-T, a label that was first used in January 2010. And it's been produced since then under different ownerships. However, in 2011, a winery in St. Helena, Salvestrin, also named one of its wines Cult, C-U-L-T, according to intellectual property lawsuit. So Salvestrin demanded that the Snyder family stop using Cult. And the Snyder family refused and said the label remained in use. And so the Salvestrin family threatened to sue. And the Snyder family then changed hands. Then in 2018, the Snyder family sold its vineyard and winery to Summit Vineyards. About a year later, Appalachian Trading Company purchased the Cult label, and the company also purchased Summit's vineyard and inventory. Then Silverstone did not demand the Appalachian drop Cult immediately after the sale, according to the complaint, but in February 2021, Silverstone demanded that immediately cease and desist sales of the label or face federal court litigation. So Silverstein claimed to have first used Cult in 2009 before the Snyder family did. In a lengthy letter, they called it, the Snyder family called it a groundless claim. And then a trademark litigator based in Silicon Valley sent a second letter on behalf of Silverstein reiterating the demand that Appalachian stop using Cult and threatened to take it to court. Again, Appalachian provided a lengthy response explaining it did not and it would not stop using Cult. So the Appalachian Trading Company argues that they did not receive that Silverstrin did not receive a COLA label for Cult until July 2011, which that is really the important part of it too, that COLA label, that, you know, the labeling. Appalachian Trading also argued that Silverstrin allegedly knew that it had substantially exclusive use of the name Cult when it applied for the trademark. And so more litigation is expected, and the lawyers are trading letters and trading insults. And last week, Appalachian Trading Company principal reached out to Silverstrin and confirmed it intended to sue over Cult, according to the complaint. Now, that's how this stuff works. It's ridiculous. It goes on and on and on. And the only people who make a lot of money is the lawyers, and, you know, just to stop the label. I don't think people are going to be confused. And the reason I wanted to read this to you is because Florida Estates Winery, we were using the Plantation as our main label. We had a Plantation Red, a Plantation White, a Plantation Spice, a Plantation Blush, and Casa del Sol labels were some of them. But Plantation was our basis, this because of the Florida Estates Winery, and it was like, you know, a plantation, and this was the thing. And it was simple. We're not up anymore. I was going to say go check it out, but the site has been down for some time, obviously. But this was the thing. Well, I received a letter back in 2012 or 13 that stated it was from a West Virginia, I think, a West Virginia winery that, from a lawyer from West Virginia winery, that stated that I need to cease and desist using Plantation Blush because they use it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I need to cease and desist because they're using it also. I'm not shipping to West Virginia. They're not shipping to Florida that I knew of. And yet, I guess somebody had been here and they got a bottle and they took it back up there and they saw it and they go, well, wait a minute. They can't use the same label as us. So they took it to the lawyer. And the lawyer sent me a letter, cease and desist. So I wrote them back and I said, I got my cola on this in 2001. When did you get yours? Cola means that I was registered with the, you know, TTB, Tobacco and Trade Bureau, and that's when it was first okayed. And I said, when did you get yours? And I never heard from them again. That was the end of my cease and desist order. And I did not cease and desist. And I didn't tell them, I wanted them to cease and desist because I thought it was all frivolous. But this is what goes on. I'm sure I was just one example there, and I'm sure it bounces around and goes on around the country all the time. But this just reminded me of some of that. It's just, you know, I'm the big boy. I want this label. No, I'm the big boy. I want this label, and you can't play with my, you know. I don't think people are going to get confused. Now, maybe Napa and Sonoma, since they are right across the street from each other, well, not literally, but I mean, over the hill. One of them's in St. Helena and the other was in Napa. I guess that could be an issue because they're both right there, and that might be an issue with both of them. But a lot of these around the country that do this stuff, I think, are just sort of, well, just so the lawyers can have something to do and make more money. And it's, yeah, well, that's my opinion of it. So, let's see. Oh, let me see. And then I've got a few more here for you. Naked Wines. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen those. They're advertised everywhere. They have advertising on just about every type of channel and every type of thing you can find and every type of website and all that. And their annual sales leapt 68% during the lockdown. 68%. But a jump in advertising costs led to a bigger loss, which just came out. Their annual sales leapt up, but because of the lockdown, they increased advertising, which cost them more. Now, Naked Wine sells about 300,000 customer base via prescription. And the advertising cost more than doubled to £42.3 million. And this is obviously out of, let me see, what is this, Reuters? Well, why is Reuters talking pounds? But 42.3 million pounds, or about 12% of total sales, up from 19.8 million pounds a year earlier. That paid off with the Norwich-based company, reporting a 53% surge in total customers and 78% growth in the United States, which is now its target market. However, its shares fell 1.5% as its loss before tax nearly doubled to $15.5 million. They estimate that the advertising costs around the world has really hurt it. Stay-at-home trends have driven a step change in volumes from online wine sectors. It's uncertain if this trend will hold up post-COVID-19. They said the strong performance has continued in the new fiscal year, and it's estimated an investment of 40 to 50 million pounds in new customers. Majestic Wine is a spinoff from Naked Wine in 2019, and it's seen a record online sales in the pandemic. So if you're a fan of Naked Wines, Majestic Wine, same company, or if you don't like Naked Wines and you see Majestic Wines out there, it's the same company. Or if you find a new wine that's Majestic Wines, it's the same as Naked Wines. So just to let you know. But it costs a lot to advertise. Yes, it does. Chemical damage kills vineyards. Now, this is an interesting case here. June 4th, 2021, this was just about 5 weeks ago, 57 Texas High Plains wine grape growers filed suit seeking hundreds of millions of dollars in damages from Bayer Monsanto and BASF. They allege that the chemical giant sold a defective genetically modified cottonseed system to Texas farmers, featuring a highly volatile weed killer that moved miles off target and crippled scores of vineyards across the state. Now, there you go. This has been a thing that you have to worry about whenever you spray any chemicals. This is why there's been lawsuits in France, Spain, Italy, Germany. I can probably go back and find documented lawsuits for this type of thing in every wine region in the world and everywhere in this country. This happens. Whenever you have any spraying, it drifts. And whenever you're doing spraying in your own vineyard, you have to be careful for drifts. And if your vineyard is around something else, you have to be careful for drifts. Well, this one was a little bit different. This was genetically modified cotton seeds that contained a very volatile weed killer, and this drift and got into the vineyards. The suit says that in recent years, the volatilizing dicamba applied to genetically modified cotton crops have damaged up to 95% of the productive grapevines on dozens of family-owned and operated vineyards covering 3,000 acres near Lubbock. That's in Texas, obviously. The loss threatens the existence of many High Plains vineyards, which have taken decades to cultivate and account for 85% of the grapes produced, sold, or used by the state's $13.1 billion wine industry. So this is, without doubt, a serious thing or a serious charge. He said evidence shows Monsanto knew as early as 2009, years before the seed system was released, that dicamba is highly volatile under hot and dry conditions, turning into a gas that travels miles to wreak havoc on vulnerable broadleaf crops such as grapes and other fruits. Yet, it lured by the prospect of billions in profit, the company joined forces with BASF in 2010 to develop and eventually market X10 seed system, in which seeds are genetically modified to survive applications of dicamba-based weed killer. And so because of that, they planted it anyway, they sold it anyway, and now they are seeking damage. In February of 2020, a Missouri jury awarded $265 million damages caused by the dicamba drift to one peach orchard, which was eventually reduced to $75 million. But Bayer Monsanto struck a $400 million settlement to settle other suits filed by other farmers. That agreement does not cover the Texas grape growers. And so it is a big lawsuit and a big problem. Since there's no dicamba-resistant grapevines, the plants were defenseless to the millions of pounds of the herbicide in the region's atmosphere. While the suit is receiving extensive press coverage in Texas, and it's the first I've read about it, it's not clear whether the Texas wine industry can survive it. Some vineyards have experienced a 90% reduction in grape harvest, which brings in more than $2,500 a ton. In the past, we've gotten top premium price for our grapes, said Cliff Bingham, one of the plantees from the Bingham family vineyards. He added that his annual production crashed from 800 tons to under 100 tons. Now, when you start thinking $2,500 a ton, that's 700 tons that they have reduced. Now, Bingham says his business is facing extinction because of dicamba poisoning. We're talking about the legacy of a family business. 8 of our 11 children's livelihoods depend on the vineyard. If we can't grow dicamba-free, we're history. So there you go. Serious thing. There's this chemical drift and the chemicals in the stuff. I'm not anti-chemical. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one to say all chemicals should be stopped because it has helped, but you know, there's better ways to do it. And when a company like Monsanto or BASF knows about the damage and they continue with it anyway, then that's wrong. It's bottom line, that is just wrong. So as I see stuff, as I find stuff on this subject, I will pass it on to you. But that's where we are now. And that's it for tonight. Made it through the night without thunder and lightning. So,
and I had to call back.
Oh, yeah.
I was disconnected, and I was sitting here and taking my notes and stuff, and all of a sudden, boop, I go, what?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I had to call again. I see that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't look at the studio page when
right.
I'm doing the show, because I'm always finding and looking at articles and stuff. But yeah, I see where you disappeared and came back. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we are.
Thanks, Block Talk Radio. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, that could be Google Voice. I don't know, but it's easier to blame Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it is. Well, since I can get through on the microphones or on the headsets, then, you know, we'll blame Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that's Blog Talk Radio doing it. You were talking about California, the fourth largest wine producer in the world. And
right.
The others that you mentioned, the first three, those are countries.
Yes.
And you're talking about
a state
in the U.S. is fourth behind all those, you know, three countries. I'm like, whole countries.
Yes. Oh, I know. That shocked me too when I read that. And, you know, and I wonder, those three countries must really produce, mm-hmm. because when you add the rest of the United States into it, I still don't think we're number one. You know, but still, they're behind. A state is behind three other countries. I know, it's just amazing. Well, 43 out of 57 counties grow grapes. It's phenomenal. I don't even know if they're counting the raisin grapes in that either. I think those might just be wine grapes. Sort of staggering. It really was sort of staggering. But also, you know, on the news articles tonight, that was the Granger, Penfold Granger set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $400,000 for a Penfold Granger from 51 to 2018. It's a lot of wine, but oh my gosh. I mean, and when you get that, you wonder, okay, is this been kept? I mean, they confiscated two complete sets, but did those crooks know what they were doing, or did they just do it because they thought it was something good to steal and they just threw it in a warehouse in a box or something?
Yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder about that too. So,
I remember that show on Netflix I was telling you about. If you get a chance, watch it. I think it's called Rotten. And they had one on wine and all of the almost, I guess, criminal activity that's going on out there. And if anybody get a chance to, and it's definitely worth the watch. But, I just couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, oh, they're so nice. And, you know, they come on here. Well, those are the ones that come on here. But then you have that other side, you know, like the one that you're talking about, and it's like something going on.
Yeah.
Something.
It's amazing the amount of fraud going on out there. I mean, I see stuff all the time, and we hear about, you know, so and so was caught, or they discovered these info collections and stuff like that. But there is lots and lots of others that not quite that large, not quite that complex. That's going on constantly. That's making people a few thousand dollars a month that they're under the radar, and it's still going on. And like you say, that Netflix show, I started watching, and then we had a thunder event, and it went off, and I didn't finish it. There's so many little small ones going on that it's frightening out there, which you may be stuck with when you go out and buy bottles from a non-reputable dealer or even your local liquor store. Some of them are filtered through liquor stores and stuff. So,
Not cool.
Not cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, we will go ahead and end the show for tonight on July the 8th, and we'll be back on the 15th, which is next Thursday, live, not recorded. We'll be back at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Halfway through the month already. Wow.
Yeah. And let's see y'all. Thank y'all for tuning in, and be safe, and keep drinking the wine, and we'll all come back here next Thursday and enjoy another All About Wine with Ron. Woo-hoo!
Hey,
and,
thanks for listening.
Good. Have a good week. Thank you.
Yeah, be safe. Thank you.
Like my first day, I can't find the video. Oh, there it is.
Can't find the button? No.
There we go.
Oh, good.
Play it. Play.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Boom. All right.
Go to the green room.
Yeah, let's get all of us in the green room.